NRP S2 E20 Digital Painting Tutorials. Okay, everybody, this week we're talking about digital painting. Now, painting at all, I recommend everyone experience and try it out. You know, there's all kinds of different mediums, all kinds of different kinds of paint, all kinds of different brushes, all kinds of different materials to paint on. And digitally is really nice because, you know, granted, the texture of what you're working on is always going to feel different. It's always going to feel, I've heard people describe it as like, you know, drawing on glass with an icicle. And, you know, some people are like, well, you just have to think of it as trying to skate and create your art beautifully with your skin. Like, shut up. I mean, we're getting closer and closer to getting, a texture like paper. I mean, if you're painting with a tablet, you can just put a piece of paper on the tablet, you know, and try and get the bite that way. Or you can just try and get used to it. I always try and focus more on the work than the feel of the device as I'm trying to work, and I, you know, it's a little hard to get into the zen of it. But anyway, let's talk about the different techniques about making painting. There's two real approaches when you're doing a painting. There's underpainting and overpainting, and these two can be done together. The idea of underpainting is traditionally, you know, I mean, you all understand the idea of an undersketch with, you know, the charcoal or pencil. You draw out all the proportions and everything to start filling it with color and everything. And underpainting is the idea that you work out the values in like a grayscale, or really more of a brown or a sienna works, because, you know, this is, if you've ever done like cell shading for cartoon characters and stuff where you've drawn and fill out the colors and then you do the shadows on their own layer and then it comes over the colors and makes the colors darker in certain areas. You know, and that the thing, it's basically a lot of the same thing where you sculpt the shadows and the lights and the values in the underpainting layer first. Now, the issue with that is that you have to be careful with underpainting. If you use the wrong colors or if you mix stuff wrong, it can come out looking dirty. You know, like a bad colorization of a black and white photo always looks a little gray, a little ashy, a little, it doesn't quite look right. I mean, that's why you would use, say, like more of a raw or burnt umber kind of thing, because that's closer to, it's a lighter color, it might bleed into things better, it might actually, you know, because the idea with shading and all this stuff is that you want the colors to not appear like you just put, there's no flat shadow, it's not that, it's you want a darker tint, or, you know, like if there's a, it's all relative to lights around in the area. You know, if you're reflecting a certain color of a light, shadows are going to be cast certain colors. I mean, colors and stuff like that, people have to understand that color is very relative. You know, you can have two colors next to each other, and then if you bring in a third one, one color can look like two different colors, just depending on what it's next to. And also, the effect that the other color has on a color, the shadows and the all the ambient light and everything. But anyway, underpainting, you first figure out your values, you get the shadows and everything figured out, and then you start going over that with a color to let the, so that you focus on getting the shadows done, and then you can focus on making colors. Overpainting is the idea that you can overpaint on top of underpainting, of course, but, you know, if you look at, like, say, Vincent van Gogh with his big, thick impasto painting, all that's overpainting because that's all done, you know, layer upon layer, and that's straight paint. That's not, I mean, I'm sure he did underpainting techniques too, but it's like a lot of it is you're building up your values on top of, and you're having to sort out colors. I mean, there are ways and approaches to do things where, like, you know, you lay in a color and then you might lay in kind of a shadow on top of after the fact or this or that, but it's often hard, I think, to judge both the change in color and then also the shading values. It's a little bit easier to separate them, but then again, the whole coloring your underpainting thing, it's a little mix and match. Working digitally is nice because you can adjust colors. You know, people, if you do an underpainting and you realize you want the color to work. I mean, I've seen people do pencil drawings with graphite and then they lasso in Photoshop a certain area like the person's arm, and then they adjust the colors to a skin tone, and then they can paint over areas they want. They can, you know, it's really working digitally is a really beneficial place, because you can change things and copy and tweak and do stuff, and it's a lot cleaner than working with paint where you have to clean up after the fact. And this also brings up a simple point, the idea of what color is flesh? Because every time, you know, people get to painting and the professor says, okay, students, let's paint this figure. Professor, how do I mix flesh color? It's like, there's really no one color. Well, first off, there's no one color to flesh, because people are all kinds of different hues and colors and whatnot. And also, even if a person is, you know, Whitey McWhitington, there's still variations of color. You know, there's hints of blues and you know, the reds and tans and all these different things in the same, you know, you have to do, like, you know, a simple swatch of a base color, and then you do highlights in certain color, shadows in certain colors, and maybe there's some certain light coming through that tints it this certain color. And it's a lot of experimentation. It really depends on what you're looking at too, which, again, this is why you try and really see what you're looking at, because a lot of people, there's the iconic ideal of what you think you're looking at, and then there's actual, well, this thing in front of me has, you know, like, if you have people, we had a fun time in drawing class. I remember we had a model that was, you know, an older woman, and the instructor was like, now if I'm going to be paying attention to how you people draw, and if I look at this and see like Victoria's Secret models, I'm going to be wondering what are you looking at here? It's you're looking at the idealization. You're what you think you're seeing. It's like, no, humans have curves, and we have rolls, and we have weight. We have a lot of things, and that make us more interesting to render. And, you know, working with paint, it's a fun experience. It's also, oh man, every illustration has its own challenge, but a fun one to come across. Now, I'm going to show you an example on the blog. Again, this is another one of those visual podcasts. Check it out. But you want to check out two different ways to paint SpongeBob SquarePants. One of them is done in Art Rage by a fellow who did illustrations for Nickelodeon magazine and SpongeBob comic book magazine thing out there. Check out the examples. Also, there's how to paint SpongeBob in a really, I would say, not, I don't know if photorealistic, but a real more realistic Photoshop way of trying to get colors and lights and stuff in it. But yeah, this way, this fellow who colored this illustration, he likes doing shiny tentacle creatures, and he has a really interesting way of working in Photoshop. He works with a soft round brush at a very low opacity, and he just goes over again and again and again, building up shadows, highlights, going to a color, doing, you know, just look at the difference between the two paintings, and two different styles, two different approaches to working digitally. And, you know, one of them is set to mimic more of a traditional paint, but it's, you know, even a traditional painter wouldn't paint, you know, SpongeBob's supposed to be goofy and cartoony and fun, and I like both the different renderings of the character. And also, I'm going to link some different digital art tutorials. There's one, the thing is, I had a lot of these things bookmarked, and then I wanted to open up my bookmarks folder one day, and oh no, this site changed the way they have all their stuff laid out, so all of them were broken. So I had to find some. But Android Arts has a really nice just breakthrough of all kinds of different ways to work. There's two skin tone tutorials I'll link, human skin, painting human lips, painting realistic hands, a low opacity digital painting tutorial, which kind of goes back to the whole working with a brush with low opacity and just keep working things. Drawing of the Dead is a fun tutorial by a guy doing like a parody of a horror slash pulp comic cover. And I think the download samples has a nice brush in it. I recall a nice pencil brush. Also, painting clouds. And then examples of making of Equilibrium, Funfair, and Superbad, which, you know, I mean, you can, if you Google digital painting. You'll find examples from people who do really great digital paintings. And, you know, check them out. Experiment. There's some people have their favorite artists. There's all kinds of different ways to digitally paint. You can try and go for a super hyper realistic, you know, a David style rendering, or you can go for something really cartoony, and you can, you know, it's fun to see something in between, something that's drawn cartoony but rendered in a nice detailed style. You know, there are times when I've been drawing, working on really realistic projects, and you kind of get lost in it after a while, because it's just you forget everything else and you just make the art. And if you're working from an image, that can be kind of its own thing too. If I've tried to draw from, you know, someone says, can you make a picture of me, and then they send you one reference photo, and it's like, well, I can draw this photo and I can only pull so much out of it, and I'll use what I can. But, you know, if you're working from a subject, if you're working on something that's actually there, look at it in the real world, get reference images, and make it a project, spend a lot of time with it, and make the image that you're rendering. This is another thing that people do, is they make an image and they go, okay, I did this. It's like, I had a friend in a college, you know, one of my college friends was doing an image of a chain, and she's like, I don't know what to do with it. And the professor is like, you know, this is just a very, you know, iconic, idealized, generic looking chain. And what you want to do is tell the story of this chain. You know, you want to give it, you know, make it aged, if it's rusted, and if it's, you know, is it because it's an old chain and it needs, you know, or it's about to be brittle and broken through, or is it shiny straight from the factory? Is there still a logo stamped on it? You know, is it, what's the lighting of the time of day? Is it really, really sunny? Is, you know, you have to think of the story that you're trying to tell with the image. You know, sometimes, like, a thing that's been very popular now is adding textures to your work, digital work. And sometimes that texture has a reason for it. You know, it's like, you know, my comic 2071, it has that really, that old faded paper, and then that comic book style printing with everything spotted a little bit. And that's for an effect, that's for a reason. And there's other things, you know, you can have aged paper, you can have old wrinkly textures. But if you're adding a texture, try to have something that's different, that looks cool, but also try and tell a story. Try and have things, you know, something might look super sleek and super polished versus right next to something that's super old and brittle. Try to tell the story with your image. Try to tell the story with the rendering and where it's coming out, the mixing of the colors. Have fun with your work too. Because that's another thing, is it's very easy to be intimidated and to work yourself into a frustration. And if something's just not working that day, that's all right. Put it away and work on something else. Then come back to it later. You'd be surprised how working on one thing one day and working on another, sometimes I'll come back to something that I was really flying on one day, and I'll look at a day where I'm just not putting anything together, right, and go, wow, where's this guy? I want to talk to him. Where'd all these lines go? You know, and that's life. You're always swinging for fences, and sometimes you hit them and sometimes you don't. So stay out there, have fun. Thanks for tuning in. I'll see you all on the other side. More, visit NoRightsProductions.com. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/NoRights. And hey, why don't you check out my Tumblr at NoRights.tumblr.com.